Raiders fans, welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined this morning by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. We're talking about a victory over the Detroit Lions yesterday. To do that, we have a special guest joining us on the phone this morning to talk about that and his new book, Packers Pride, Green Bay Greats Share Their Favorite Memories. We have Rob Reichel joining us. Rob, how are you doing this morning?
A little tired. How are you doing, Brian?
Very good. Glad you could join us. Let's start out by talking about the game yesterday, and then we'll get to the book in just a little bit. But the Packers win 22-9 to continue I think it's a 23-year streak over wins over the Lions in Wisconsin. But how much stock can we put into this victory against the Lions team without Calvin Johnson?
Well, I think there's bits and pieces, Brian, that you can maybe take some optimism from. You know, it's really hard to judge the defense yesterday based on, you know, Detroit playing without Calvin Johnson. I mean, Brian, I talked to a guy in Vegas a couple years back who said, other than quarterbacks, you know, there's only two or three skill players in the league that will move a point spread if they're out. It's the Adrian Petersons of the world and Calvin Johnson. I mean, otherwise you're talking, you know, guys like Manning and Brady and Rodgers and Breeze would have to miss for a point spread to move. Well, that line was at 7 yesterday, you know, at 10 o'clock or even 10:25 before we, you know, got the inactives. And as soon as Johnson was out, that thing jumped to 10. I mean, Johnson's that kind of a difference maker. Where he's going to move a line like that in Vegas. It altered everything Green Bay had to do defensively. I know they say they didn't change a lot up necessarily yesterday, but they were going to have to devote two and potentially three guys to Johnson all day. And, I mean, Detroit, especially without Burleson there as well, Brian, playing with the cast of wide receivers they played. I mean, that's as pedestrian as it comes. I wouldn't judge a lot, you know, from the defensive performance, even though it was really good. They were able to swing all that attention to Bush instead of worrying about kind of these number three and four wide receivers that were playing. I would take some optimism from the offense on a couple of things, Brian. First of all, I mean, I think maybe Mason Crosby has it figured out. 5 for 5. He's 9 for 9 now on the season. He's clearly headed in the right direction after a really good summer, fending off a couple of challengers. And then secondly, I think that offensive line and that running game are pretty legit. I think that can be, you know, a top 12, 14 kind of running attack when it's all said and done. And that's all they need, really, Brian, with a quarterback and a group of pass catchers as good as what they have. If they get a running game into the top half of the NFL, I think they're going to be pretty versatile come December, and then for them they hope the playoffs on. And I would take a lot of optimism from the way that offensive line held up against Sue and Fairley and the rest of that defensive front Detroit has. I mean, they blocked most of the time 3-on-2 inside all day against Sue and Fairley, and then asked the tackles to hold up 1-on-1, and those guys really did it. If you count Lacy as virtually a 100-yard day yesterday, that's three straight games, three straight different running backs, and the one constant's the offensive line. And, you know, I think that's a huge bright spot offensively. They clearly struggled in the red zone. They didn't punch the ball in as much as they would want to. That's something they've got to get fixed. But, you know, overall, a solid win.
So tell me, where is this offense going? It seems, like you said, to have flashes here and there where they do well, but the consistency just isn't there. You know, the red zone efficiency not there. The wide receiver production, it seems like it's hit or miss. It's a bomb, or it's an amazing sideline catch, or otherwise it's just a little dink and dunk. Where is this offense going?
It's a great question, Brian. I honestly, I'm not even sure, you know, that they fully know. Somebody asked Rodgers a question yesterday about the identity of the offense kind of switching to a run-first type of attack, because they ran the ball again yesterday more than they threw it. And he said, he wasn't ready to concede that. He said, you know, we usually need half the season or even more than that to kind of figure out exactly who we are. You know, Brian, I don't know if you remember in 2003, when Amon Green had his huge season, 1880 or whatever it was, rushing the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, you know, their best line since the glory days of the 60s. I mean, that became a run-first operation, even though Brett Favre was still, what, 33 years old, I guess, and still had a lot of life left in that arm. They became a run-first team. They threw the, you know, they ran the ball 52, 53% of the time, I want to say, that particular season. I don't think they're trending to that level, Brian, but I think when it's all said and done, this, you know, it could be 55-45 or 54-46, something like that, with the pass-run ratio. When in the past with McCarthy, you know, we've always seen it in the low 60s, the amount of time that they throw the ball versus running the ball. And I do think they're headed in that direction. You know, you're right. It's kind of been all or nothing in the passing game. They hit the home run to Jones, or, you know, they hit a big play to whoever it is. And otherwise, it's been largely inconsistent. You've seen that really play out inside the red zone, where I don't think they've got all the answers they want right now. But even, Brian, we're at the quarter pole now, you know, 2-2, and when a lot of stuff starts kind of coming into focus. And that's one thing I think that's still really out of focus is who are these guys right now on offense.
And then even, you know, Eddie Lacy has a nice day, but I've seen people now complaining, you know, you spend a second rounder on this guy and he runs for practically 100 yards, but there was an opportunity or two where it's third and one and they don't give it to him. What, a little bit curious there as well.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot with Lacy at this point to complain about, other than staying on the field, you know, and the injury side of things. You know, if the complaint is more on the play calling, you know, that's certainly another thing. But I think Lacy, if he can stay on the field, Brian, even though we're, you know, he hasn't been on the field as much as they want in the first quarter of the season, I still think this guy's got a chance to be a 1,000-yard back. I think they're going to lean heavily on the running game when the weather turns nasty. They've done that more, you know, in recent seasons. They'll certainly run the ball more late in the year. You know, Rodgers said yesterday, you know, we've got this 230-pound back, but let's make people tackle him. And I think that's kind of the mentality. I think Lacy's a, you know, as long as he stays healthy, Brian, and that's always, as you know, been the major issue with him, I think he's a 20, 22, 24, you know, carry a week type of guy as we get into November and December here. And I think, you know, I think Packer fans overall are going to be pretty darn happy that he fell in their laps when he did later in that second round.
I'm going to throw this out there and see if anything sticks. And I don't know how much there is to this, but I'd like to get your opinion on the topic. Is Greg Jennings a bigger loss than perhaps maybe most realize?
It's a great question. I hadn't thought about it at length in a while. I'll say this, Brian. I did the math in the off season, and I think in the final 22 games is what it was that Greg Jennings was a Packer. He played 11 and he missed 11.
Okay.
And they had scored 295 points or something it was with Jennings, and it was like 291 or 292 without Jennings, where the numbers were almost identical. I guess I lean toward saying no, Brian, because I don't think Greg Jennings has a whole lot left in the tank, even though he had a pretty solid game in, what, week four against Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
He's clearly not the guy he was in, let's just say, 07 and 08 when he was coming into his own. I think Green Bay's top three, and really even top four if you count Finley in that mix too, is virtually on a par with almost anybody in football. Where I think they're really playing with fire, Brian, is that they have virtually no depth. And now without Ross and just the four wideouts, you know, you're playing all three wideouts and Finley, you know, virtually an entire football game. They're playing 60, 70, 80 snaps, I guess, depending on, you know, what kind of offensive day you have. I mean, Boykin's only real action yesterday, he gets called for the holding penalty. I mean, they have virtually nothing behind those three. And, I mean, history shows and the odds are that one of those guys, at least, and maybe more, is going to miss time somewhere along the way. Well, now what are you looking at? I mean, that to me is where I'd be worried. That's been my criticism with Ted Thompson in terms of addressing the wide receiver position. I thought he needed to do it a lot higher than the seventh round this last April. You know, and then he took the guys that, you know, the two sevens that just didn't really pan out.
Yep. Speaking of depth, I think everybody is kind of holding their breath right now in regards to the Packers linebacker situation, in particular the injury to Clay Matthews. But it looks like, you know, Rob Francois maybe is out for the season, and Brad Jones, we don't really know what the situation is there. Can Clay Matthews play with the club cast? Do you think that's the way it'll play out?
I don't know. I mean, today'll be pretty interesting when we hear from the head coach, won't it? I mean, I guess the one thing that should probably ease some mind, let's even if Matthews misses 2, 3, 4 weeks, whatever it would turn out to be if he doesn't play that way, you know, with the cast, is that they had such terrific production yesterday. You know, well, Neal's been pretty steady all year, but really for the first time we saw Nick Perry, mm-hmm. you know, play at a high level since he got to Green Bay, the 2 sacks. The 5 tackles, really, in just a half of football, Brian. You know, 2 pretty big sacks, too, where they lost 18 total yards along the way. Neal's been unbelievably productive in his time, you know, in this switch to outside linebacker, where he actually started the game yesterday for the first time and replaced Perry in the starting lineup. But, you know, if Perry is actually more comfortable in Matthews' outside linebacker spot and Neal continues to play at the level he has, I think they're okay at that position. They're certainly going to run into some depth issues on the inside as we move forward here, because you're right, Francois is going to be a season ender. We don't know enough yet on Jones. You know, so they were down really yesterday to a bunch of unproven guys. I guess the one good thing for him, Brian, you know, they play so much nickel and dime that a lot of these guys aren't on the field more than, you know, 20, 30 snaps a game anyways. Yep. It's just how do you cover those snaps? I mean, if some of these guys turn out to be season enders or even a month, they're gonna have to go and find another linebacker or two off the street.
Yeah, that's for sure. We're talking to Rob Reichel, author of Packers Pride, Green Bay Greats Share Their Favorite Memories. And Rob, let's talk about this book. Did it just come out? Did it hit shelves?
Yeah, actually, you know, at all the major bookstores right now, people can get it online at, you know, your standard Amazons. And the publisher of the book is Triumph Books out of Chicago, so they can certainly get it at triumphbooks.com as well. But it's in all your Barnes and Nobles and, you know, your Borders and places like that. Now, Brian, I actually co-authored the book with Leroy Butler. You know, Packer fans certainly remember him as, well, you know, their best safety in the last 40 years. And Leroy was an all-decade from the 1990s and was a sensational Packer who invented the Lambeau Leap. So about a third of the book, Brian, I would say, is, you know, some of Leroy's favorite memories and stories, and we can get into those shortly. And then, you know, I tracked down then, Brian, probably another 75 Packers or so, former Packers, and even some current guys, you know, kind of for their favorite memories and for their favorite stories of being a Packer, a lot of stuff that I didn't know. And I believe there'll be a lot of stuff in the book that as the average fan reads, they'll go, wow, I didn't know that, or I didn't know this about him and things like that. And really, Brian, we cover every era of Packer football, at least in terms of guys that, you know, I could find that were still living. So it's, you know, it's a pretty comprehensive book in terms of favorite memories and stories from, let's even say, the 1940s on.
Is there like a favorite story that maybe sticks out to you, or perhaps one that's never been told before, or maybe a lot that listeners might not know about? You know, is there one that sticks out in your mind?
Well, you know, there's a number, Brian. I'll try to be brief and you know, give you the Cliff Notes version. A couple from Leroy Butler really stood out to me. I'll kind of start with those because even though I started covering the Packers in the early 2000s and lost my ability then to be a fan, but I grew up on Packer football and was a huge fan of the 1990s Packers as they kind of came into their own. And, you know, Butler told a great story in the book how when Reggie White showed up there in 1993, that Reggie wanted all these guys to come to Bible study. And mm-hmm. you're dealing with a lot of 23 and 24-year-old guys who are out late and certainly at 6 a.m. don't want to be in the building for Bible study. So they were getting 3 or 4 guys, you know, for every Bible study. And Reggie went to Leroy and said, how do I get these guys to get on board with this? And Leroy said, you've got to get down to their level. You know, everybody goes out Thursday night. Everybody has a few pops, has some wings in a local establishment. You need to be at this. Because Reggie was in bed at 7:30, 8 o'clock, 8:30 every night. Reggie went home and got his rest and saw his family. So Reggie apparently was the first one out at, you know, at this place having wings and a few pops. And so he stayed out, like, for him, I guess, what was pretty late, 9, 10 o'clock. And, you know, the guys all kind of saw that and said, you know, if he's coming to us, that, you know, that's meaningful. That's important. Mm-hmm. And the next morning, Butler said at Bible study, they had 40 guys. And Butler said, that's when I knew we were actually a team. That's when I knew we had a chance, you know, to go beat Dallas, to go beat San Francisco, things like that. So I thought that was fascinating. I had never known, Brian, and I actually had never seen it reported anywhere, that when the Packers played San Francisco in the playoffs in 1995, the 49ers were the defending Super Bowl champs. And that particular day out in San Francisco, Packer fans kind of remember it a lot, largely at the Wayne Simmons game. Simmons was all over the field that particular game and destroyed the tight end, Brent Jones, through the course of the game. But the Packers were a 4-3 defense. You know, Green Bay people remember the dominating front four that the Packers had there in the mid-90s. Well, that day or that week, Fritz Schirmer switched them over to a 3-4 defense, and they played a 3-4 the entire game against the 49ers. And Butler said, I mean, it really took Steve Young and Jerry Rice and that group until about the third quarter to figure out what the heck was going on. So, you know, there's some great stories like that football-wise as well. Butler tells some great stories, Brian, about Brett Favre, how, you know, what a sensational leader he was. Brett's gotten, you know, a lot of negative publicity through the years for being a diva and stuff like that. Butler, you know, said maybe that happened later on, but, you know, when he was initially there, Favre was just someone who brought people together. He said, you know, inside the locker room, it didn't matter, you know, what culture you were from, where you were from. Brett reached out to you. You know, he said, you know, guys would be going hunting, and Brett, you know, worked himself into that group. Guys would be sitting there playing spades, and Brett would sit down and play cards with them, even though he had no idea how to play spades. You had guys dancing in one corner to hip-hop, and Brett would go over there, and even though he couldn't dance, he would dance, you know, and dance to the hip-hop. So he's got fun stories like that, you know, along the way. Other things, Brian, that I've kind of learned, you know, I didn't know, for example, that Don Beebe had the Super Bowl ball from 1996. I talked to Beebe at length for one of the chapters, and there's a good story in there how, you know, when the game ended, he asked Favre for the ball, and Favre gave it to him, said, you deserve it. People remember the big game Beebe had in week 7 that year against the 49ers and really helped Green Bay, you know, kind of pass San Francisco that season and go on to win a Super Bowl. So Beebe's got that Super Bowl ball, which I found, you know, pretty interesting. You know, I talked to Bart Starr for the book, and he's got great stories, Brian, and, you know, one of them is that he says the biggest mistake of my life was coming back and, you know, coaching in Green Bay. He had, you know, wonderful experience, you know, all those years playing for him, but those 9 years he coached did not go particularly well. And, you know, just along the way, Brian, I think Packer fans are going to learn a lot, you know, things they hadn't heard, things they, you know, they didn't know in the past. And like I said, you know, we cover a lot of different positions, a lot of different players, a lot of different eras, in addition to LaRoy's great stories.
I do think it's cool that you go from as far back as the Lombardi era to the dark days to the more recent success in the Holmgren and McCarthy eras. So I think that's really cool how that's all set up. And what's the best way to order online? Is it Amazon.com? Is it through the publisher?
Yeah, you know, I'd say the best way, Brian, is triumphbooks.com is a great way. And I'll just tell your listeners, too, Brian, if anybody out there wants a signed copy from myself or LaRoy and wants to order one that way, they can certainly drop me an email. And my email is robreichel@gmail.com. And Reichel is R-E-I-S-C-H-E-L. So robreichel@gmail.com. And then we can work something out and get you a signed copy from myself and LaRoy.
Very cool. I encourage our listeners to take Mr. Reichel up on that offer with a signed copy from himself and LeRoy Butler. So very cool. Rob, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us this morning, talk about a Lions victory, talk about the book. Thanks a lot.
Brian, I appreciate the time. Best to you and your listeners.
All right. Thanks a lot. Rob Reichel, author of the book Packers Pride, Green Bay Greats Share Their Favorite Memories, now on bookshelves everywhere. You can order it online. You can get a copy from Rob himself. And telling us we can email him personally and get an autographed copy. Please do so. Take him up on the offer. Welcome back to Railbird Central here at CheeseheadTV.com. For the live version of the show, we briefly lost audio, but we're now back on air. I hope that we haven't lost people long. But anyway, glad to be back on air talking about a Green Bay Packers victory over yesterday. I'm not sure at what point we lost you here, but talking about Mason Crosby, what's really interesting, I found out that since last season, when Mason Crosby was going through the worst of his struggles, since late last season, he has now converted, if I'm correct, he has now converted 15 straight field goals during the regular season. This dating back to last year, I think it's only dating back to like the last game or two of the 2012 regular season. Now into this season, in which he has converted, he's perfect on 2013. He is now 9 for 9, including the 5 field goals that he had yesterday. So 9 for 9 plus the few he did last year. I think he's up to 15 straight, if I'm correct. And it's like 19, including the preseason, because he went perfect in the exhibition season this year. I mean, Mason Crosby is just in a groove right now that we've seen in the past. We've seen this out of him where he'll just go on a streak. He won't miss for weeks. And it really does just look like he's one of the best kickers in the entire NFL. And I do think that's so impressive. And kudos for the Packers for sticking by him. Kudos to the Packers for providing a little bit of competition and putting a little bit of pressure on him. I mean, it almost seemed close that the Packers might part ways with Mason Crosby at one point, as even during training camp. Remember during family night, Mason Crosby had the terrible family night. He made like 2 or 3 out of 8, and you're just like, oh my goodness. And it was just back to square one where the field goals weren't even close there. But they stuck by him, and now Crosby's just in the groove, and you just got to ride it. You just hope it just continues and continues for as long as possible. And it's at the point where it's even like, even if Mason Crosby misses a field goal, you're not like, oh my goodness, we're back to where we were a year ago when the misses were so bad. They weren't even the same area code as the goalposts. But, it's just fantastic to see right now where he's at, where he's come from, and it's a good redemption story, I guess, to see Crosby. How about if you were a fantasy football owner and you had Mason Crosby as your kicker yesterday, getting 5 field goals, including 1 for over 50 yards? I know some fantasy football leagues give extra points for long field goals like that, 50 and above. You had to be happy. And that, you know, what's interesting too, I think a lot of fantasy football owners probably avoided Mason Crosby during the draft before the season, knowing he was one of the more unreliable kickers in the league. Now you got to have him. I think just because the Packers traditionally, at least, even if they didn't show it yesterday, this traditionally is a high scoring offense that can put a lot of points on the board, and Mason Crosby's going to get a lot of extra point attempts, if nothing else. Yeah, I think he's a must-have. If he's a free agent in your league, you better pick him up now. So interesting that how well he did yesterday and all season long. Like I said, perfect 9 for 9 on the season now, the turnaround that's been. So kudos to Mason Crosby and one of the stars of the show yesterday during the Packers victory over the Detroit Lions. So where do the Packers go from here? They go next week to the home of the defending Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens. And I suppose what's maybe good news for the Packers is that this is not the same Ravens team as last year. It's not quite as good. Of course, they lost the heart and soul of the team, especially on the defensive side. They lost Ray Lewis to retirement, and they lost Ed Reed to free agency, two of the best players in of their era at their positions. I mean, Ray Lewis might be the best inside linebacker of his era, while Ed Reed might be the best safety of his era. Those guys are gone, and no doubt about it. I mean, they had kind of their play had you know, slowed down over the past year or two, even before that. But still, the emotional edge they brought was still good, and still smart and savvy players when they were on the football field. Kind of, Ed Reed was just like Charles Woods, and even though he might be a step slower, those guys are still liable to pick off a pass at any time just because of their smarts, their instincts, that they can still get it done. Mike Levenowicz on the live blog here says that Ravens defense can still bring it. Terrell Suggs is a monster, no doubt about it. I mean, this isn't going to be easy. Hopefully the Packers, they just build momentum after a win yesterday. They get feeling good about themselves, even though it wasn't really a great victory. Hopefully they just feel good about themselves and feel like they can take it up a notch, because they're going to have to on the road. I mean, yesterday they were in the nice confines of Lambeau Field, where they've beaten the Detroit Lions for an entire generation. And now, what is it? The Packers have won 23 out of their last 24 at Lambeau Field, something like that, in that realm. No matter who the opponent is, Lions or not. So they get the home field advantage, and now they got to go on the road to the defending Super Bowl champion, to a good team, maybe not a great Baltimore team. But that's not going to be an easy place to play. I mean, those fans in Baltimore are pumped up. They know they got a good team there, so they're going to cheer them on and cheer the heck out of them. That's what we're seeing this season. Same thing with Cincinnati. I mean, that Cincinnati franchise was moribund for so long. Finally, they realized that it's at least a playoff team there. So those fans are out and loud. And you're going to see the same thing in Baltimore. It's not going to be an easy environment to play in. So that's what the Packers have in front of them now, that we'll be talking about more this week as time goes on, no doubt about it. We'll be getting the health update from Mike McCarthy later today. I don't know how much Mike McCarthy is going to be able to shed on these injuries. Once again, I mean, if you're only a day out, sometimes you don't get the full picture, although it might be a case where we learn today inside linebacker Rob Francois is lost for the season, I think. I think that's a given. The best case scenario, Rob Francois is put on that short-term injured reserve, but I doubt that's even probably the case. If he tore his Achilles and at least tore it bad enough, I mean, he's gone for some time. So John asked, what time is McCarthy's press conference today? I think it's 3 o'clock p.m. Central Time, and it's streamed live on the Packers official website, Packers.com. So check it out then. You know, people are definitely interested in finding out more about Clay Matthews. And again, I don't know how much the Packers will be able to tell you right now about Clay Matthews. Probably know more on Wednesday. What he'll be able to do. Are they going to put him in a club cast and have him play through it? The good news is, you know, players can play through a broken thumb. We've seen it in the past. We saw Morgan Burnett do it just a few seasons ago. We saw Cullen Jenkins do it, what was it, during the Super Bowl season. I mean, it can be done. So that's the good news. That's the silver lining. And we're waiting to see more about Brad Jones, which really that's, you know, disappointing, because Brad Jones was having a fantastic season. Really, really fantastic. Seriously. I mean, sometimes it wasn't always, well, I mean, he was getting the job. He had the sack yesterday before he exited. The week before that against Cincinnati, he had both a forced fumble and a fumble recovery in the same game, and just doing a solid job in general. You know, he has the hamstring injury, and if you remember, it didn't get a whole lot of attention because it didn't keep him out long, and it kept him out of a game that didn't matter during the preseason. Brad Jones actually pulled his hamstring in week 3 of the preseason this year, and then the Packers decided to hold him out of the preseason finale, that last game against the Chiefs, and nobody really cared because it was just a preseason game, and it wasn't really too severe because Brad Jones was back in time for the season opener. But I mean, that still kind of lingers in the back of your mind, like, okay, he re-aggravated it. Maybe this is worse than we thought, and maybe it's worse the second time around than it was the first time. So that is a little bit of a concern if you're a Packers fan and worrying about the health of the inside linebacker situation. The good thing is the Packers have pretty good depth at linebacker, both inside and outside. You know, even if Francois is gone for the season, even if Brad Jones has to miss a couple weeks, the Packers still have, right now, they have Jamari Lattimore, who's working next to A.J. Hawk. They even have Sam Barrington in reserve. Packers are okay there. I'm not sure what they're going to do to fill this roster spot, probably by Francois. You got to remember, the Packers are down to 4 wide receivers, too. I'm thinking that they're going to fill the wide receiver position with a roster spot before they even sign another linebacker. And I don't know where they go from here to get somebody. I thought maybe, hey, they'd sell to sign Terrell Manning, who was with the Packers during the preseason. Apparently he was just signed by the Chiefs the Chargers this past week after he was, you know, he had spent some time there and then cut there. And yeah, anyway. So I'm not sure what the Packers do here. I would think that they'll sign a wide receiver, but we'll see what the severity of these injuries is maybe later today. So we're kind of waiting on that. Anyway, thanks for listening, folks. It's been a great show. Glad to have Rob Reichel join us on the show, author of the book Packers Pride, Green Bay Greats Share Their Favorite Memories. Good to talk to him about the book that is coming out now. And is on bookshelves at your local bookstore, at least in Wisconsin. Might have to order it online if you live out of state. But anyway, thanks. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Kirvu. We'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Believe the Lie by Umphreys McGee on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go. Might have to order